injuries are the worst. And if you struggle with injuries, or if you know someone who struggles with injuries and you're trying to eliminate or prevent them from happening in the future, then this episode is for you. We break down the most common reason why injuries happen, and we go into depth in terms of how you can eliminate them in the future. We talk about structural balance. We go into eccentric strength and the role that plays in improving and avoiding injuries altogether. We also break down some of the most common injuries and how you can strengthen those specific muscles and muscle groups with specific exercises to alleviate some of the most common injuries in basketball. I hope you enjoy this episode. There are some visuals, so if you want to watch the video presentation, then go ahead and go over to YouTube, look for my channel, Gephardt Strength, and find this episode number 10 on injury prevention, and you can follow along there as well. If not, please enjoy this audio version, and we hope that it helps you eliminate injuries for good in your career. All right, we are live on Facebook, Coach Sean.
What's up, Facebook?
How are you?
How we doing? I'm good, man. Just, you know, living the dream, living my best life.
Living your best life. We are on episode number 10. We made it to 10. That's like, I feel like a big milestone. I've never done these live shows before on a consistent basis, so.
Pretty sweet.
With the one exception of, you know, the day that my family moved from Austin, Texas to here in South Carolina, we haven't missed one. So, you know, 11 weeks, we've been going solid, and I'm really excited about today.
I'm excited. Injury prevention is big, man.
Oh, gosh. I hate injuries. They absolutely suck. I was fortunate. I didn't really have many injuries in my career. I had one when I was in college. I actually played in my high school's alumni game.
Nice.
Over the Christmas break. And I actually rolled my ankle. And so I missed two games in college because I decided to play in this stupid, meaningless basketball game when I am at my high school. But anyway, what's your injury, background? Have you?
Do you want to open this can of worms? Are you ready to go there?
Be quick, because I know you did. I know you did your knee in. I know you had a recent pec tear. But let's talk about being athletic and. What happened?
My whole training career has been predicated off my injuries because I was injured so much playing so many sports growing up, put me in physical therapy quite a few times, put me into wanting to be a physical therapist, which put me into wanting to be a strength coach. But if I run it back, I've twisted my ankle numerous times playing baseball, football, rugby. I cracked my shoulder blade in half during a motorcycle accident. I had a orthopedic surgery on my AC, acromial clavicular joint from a bench pressing injury. I tore my pec earlier this year. I tore my ACL meniscus playing rugby. And then just a bunch of other, you know, aches and pains from training and lifting and contact sports most of my life.
Right. Yikes. Wow.
So I've had three orthopedic surgeries, one on each knee, one on my shoulder, and then cracked the other scapular shoulder blade in half. So I've injured every major appendage. And then I've had issues pretty much with elbows. Elbows have been fine, but like wrist, ankle, hip. My hip right now, actually, kind of ironic. I can't really squat right now because I tweaked my hip last week.
Wow. How'd you do that?
That's a good question. I'm pretty sure my left hip and my left ankle are extremely related. My left ankle fails the dorsiflexion test. I'm about 2 inches less dorsiflexion on my left ankle than my right ankle. So at the bottom of my cleans and snatches, especially if they're heavy, I get rotated at the bottom of my position because my left ankle gets stiff. My right ankle bends more. So I rotate towards the ankle that bends more. So that rotation tweaks my hips a little bit. And then driving stick shift for 15 years has created quite an imbalance in there as well. So
yeah.
I just need to be really diligent with my prehab, if you will, my pre-injury prevention stuff. My hips need to stay warm. My shoulders got to stay warm. So I'm all about that warm up.
Totally. We're going to get to imbalances. That's actually the first point I'm going to address. But
You know, we've talked about training. I like to you know, catch up with you a little bit too on these shows and see how you're doing. You just said you had a hip injury, so it's affected your training. But
yeah,
what does that look like now for you? What's your training looking like?
Yeah, great question. So for the Olympic movements, me and my coach, we've kind of collaborated on what works best right now, and we've both decided it'd be best to keep my weightlifting positions in the power position, which for you guys that don't know, the power position is more like a quarter squat position. Yeah. So my deadlifts and my posterior chain, my glutes, hams, everything there works pretty fine. So I can still pull off the ground. So we're going to transition into more posterior chain, deadlifting type stuff. And then as far as receiving the bar and my snatches and my cleans, we're just going to be receiving in the power position and not descending into the full depth squat while I kind of work on the hip issues. And so to replace my squat, we're doing more single leg squats. So single leg RDLs, more single leg split squats. Rear foot elevated, front foot elevated, and different styles in between.
So between the added glute work and the quarter squats, it sounds like you're going full Instagram on us here.
Unfortunately, but hey, you got to modify, right? Better to modify than to quit.
Just messing around.
Oh, man.
Always fun.
That's great.
I actually am completely wrecked. The training program I did yesterday, gosh, was just chest and back. It was the torso workout.
I love the torso work.
Yeah, A series was dips and chins, five sets of 4 to 6 each, and then your B series was a compound set, so a back to back of the chest, and then a little rest back to back.
Compound sets are rough, man.
My lower lats are like, oh, they are just wrecked. My pecs are wrecked. So being a guy and wanting to put on some muscle, I love it. I think it feels great.
That's awesome.
And I've been crushing food ever since my workout yesterday to help me grow. So
gotta grow, man. Gotta eat.
And for the record, those of you who are watching, I am posting all of my workouts in detail. I'm screenshotting exactly what I am doing down to the second on my Instagram story, along with demos of every single exercise. So if you do want to see those, they do shoot over to my Facebook page, but follow my business account, Gephardt Strength, on Instagram. Nice. Or on Facebook, and you'll see those stories if you want to catch my my workouts. But let's get into injury prevention. So I'm going to lead it off here. You mentioned imbalances, and the first thing that I think of when I think of how do I prevent an injury in my athlete is structural balance. And I know me and you working together, you've probably heard me say it 1,000 times. Any of you who have watched any amount of videos in this group, I've probably mentioned structural balance often. Structural balance doesn't mean that I can, you know, stand on one leg on a Bosu ball with my eyes closed and you balance. Structural balance means your structure is actually balanced front to back, side to side, top to bottom, because we know that asymmetries and imbalances are the biggest cause of injury. They lead to injury more than any other thing. So, for example, if your quadriceps are way too strong on the front of your thigh in relation to your hamstrings, which are on the back of the thigh, then that knee is just put in an awkward situation. Let's just make it simple terms. And so that knee doesn't really work as well as it could if the strength ratios of the quadricep to the hamstring were where they should be. And so this is what I see most often. When people come in, we test. We do various tests, the clap test, the overhead squat test, you know, some other tests. And we'll find out this person has a weak VMO, this person has a weak glute medius, this person has a weak QL. When there's a weak link in the chain, other muscles have to basically pick up the effort. It's like, you know, when you're playing basketball, team defense doesn't really work if the one guy doesn't know how to help. And so you other four are constantly trying to pick up that fifth guy because he's really screwing the team over. He, you know, gets beat off the ball every time, or he doesn't know his positions on the rotations on defense, on help side. And so it's kind of the same thing with the muscles. When there's a weakness, hey, the joint can't work properly. Usually it's below the joint or above the joint. So it's not necessarily, I like to say that, you know, when an injury happens at a joint, that joint usually isn't the culprit. That joint is usually the victim.
Yes, I fully agree with you on that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's usually like people hurt their knee and they're like, oh, my stupid knee, it sucks, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, no, it could be your calf muscle. It could be your glute medius. It could be these muscles that stabilize the leg, the femur. And your knee just, hey, it's like, I can't work like this. I'm done. So,
I'm in that exact same boat. So I pretty much identified that my ankle, the imbalance of the flexibility between my ankles at the bottom of my squat, where I need both my ankles to bend the same, one stops. And so the load is going to be pushed into whatever your body can tolerate. So your body's a beautiful thing. It's a gift and a curse, but it's going to find a way to make it work. But because one ankle stops and the other one keeps going, the weight's going to shift wherever it can. So because my ankle stiffness, I'm pretty certain, is causing the rotation through my hip, and that's why my hip hurts. Yeah. And I hear that all the time, like people when they do ab exercises and their low back hurts, they say, oh man, I got a weak low back because my low back hurts. And I'm sitting there in back of my head, I'm like, well, it's probably not your low back. I say the same thing. Going through school, we had a fun analogy, was the factory worker analogy, but I like your basketball analogy better, where you got one player who's not working hard, so the other players are picking up the slack. Yeah. It's the other players that are going to complain about the guy who's not doing his job. So guys, if you're injured somewhere, unless it was an acute injury and you did something like specifically to your shoulder because you were doing a shoulder thing and you're like, ow, my shoulder, most of the times, like Phil said, it's going to be above or below the joint, and that joint that's hurt is picking up too much extra slack.
That complaining that you just said is actually a good addition to my analogy. It's like, think about, you know, I'm playing good defense, guy behind me doesn't rotate, they get an easy layup. I'm like, dude, do your job. Like,
yeah.
If I'm complaining, that's a very good analogy. That's the hurt knee, that's the hurt shoulder, that's the hurt, you know, ankle, whatever.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Another thing that surprises a lot of athletes when I work with them, and Sean, I'd like your take on this, because I don't know if we've gone down this road or not, but mobility and how it comes into play. So how I was taught, and it makes total sense in my brain, and I was talking with my wife last night, and she answered my question before I even got the punchline out.
Yeah.
But she's like, it all goes back to strength, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, we just talked about there's weaknesses, so we have to strengthen them. So that's one way that this goes back to strength. It's one reason that I'm so emphatic about getting players optimized in the weight room to prevent injuries, to increase your performance on the court. But when there's a tightness present, so say you're laying on your back and you can't lift your leg all the way to 90 degrees, which you should be able to lift your leg to 90 degrees and maybe even a little bit more as an athlete. And you can only lift it halfway. You can only lift it 45 degrees. So you have tight hamstrings in the sagittal plane, okay?
Yeah.
That's going to limit your stride length, which will shorten your top speed. So getting up the basketball court, anything over 10 meters, you'll be slower because your hamstrings are tight. Now, why are your hamstrings tight? Well, a lot of people like to stretch. I've had conversations in this group of guys who, the one guy has done an hour stretching routine, the same routine since high school. And I'm like, has it worked? Like, if your routine works, why do you still have to do the same routine for 10 years in a row? It should have probably
changed a little
a while back. Yeah. So
should have changed a little.
Yeah. So point being, when there is a tightness present, it's the body trying to stabilize a knee, trying to stabilize a joint where there is a weakness. So if there's a weakness at a joint, the one example I like to use is the back of the knee. So the back of the knee, you have the calf muscle that comes up above the knee. The gastrocnemius is the scientific term. And then the hamstrings run under the knee and they connect to each other behind the knee. And what I like to say is if one is connected to the other one very strongly, but one is connected loosely, this joint won't be as strong as it can be if both muscles are very strong and gripping each other. So our body's whole ability, our body's whole point is to survive. If you look from an anthropological point of view, from an evolutionary point of view, we are meant to make it to tomorrow. That's our body's whole goal, is to survive. So we can't really survive very well and outrun a tiger if we blow out our knee, or if we can't, you know, we roll our ankle. So when that weakness is there at the joint, at the knee joint, like I gave the example, the body will create stiffness. The body will create tightness to alleviate the problem of the weakness in the muscle, to create joint integrity, to create stability, so that you don't hurt your knee, so that you can still outrun the tiger, outrun the bear, outrun the invading army. Again, thinking, you know, from a prehistoric standpoint, from a, ancestral standpoint. Nowadays, we're not most of the time, you know, running away from people invading us, but the same applies on the basketball court. Sean, have you heard that before? Have we talked about that, about, you know, weaknesses?
I don't think we talked to it to that extent. I'm a firm believer, and this is plenty backed by numerous research studies, that stronger athletes are less injured athletes. But I'm with you on the compensations. Usually it's compensation. Like if the hamstring, like for that example that you use, when you have, it's part of the FMS test, the functional movement screen, it's a straight leg lift, but you'll notice if someone can't lift their leg up, I'll look at their low back and I'll see what their low back is doing. And I'm going to see a big arch in their low back if their leg's really stiff. And so if I can get them to tuck and round out, not arch, but actually round out their low back, smash the penny under their back, they actually get a longer stretch on their hamstring. And so to your point, a stiffness in the wrong, or tightnesses in the wrong areas, can actually create short muscles in other areas. For example, your hamstring. So if you notice someone has a really curved, archy low back, the anterior tilt of the pelvis is going to pull up on the hamstring and create a extra stretch before you even try to stretch it. So now it's already tilted from its anchor point. The anchor point has been stretched. So now when you try to move something distal or further away from the anchor, now you're getting a pre-existing stretch, which limits the optimal range of motion in your hamstring. So in those regards, a lot of it can come back to like motor abilities and ability to coordinate positions in different joints before being stretched.
Yeah, I like that. Another point I wanted to hit was eccentric strength.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I've talked about it so often. Let me see, how can I share my screen? So eccentric strength is basically the strength that our muscles have while they're being lengthened. So if you use the bicep as an example, in this position, the bicep is short. And as I open up the elbow, my bicep is lengthened, okay? So if I do a bicep curl, being able to lower it under control is the eccentric part. Most of the time in the gym, we call them negatives. So this is a study from October 2016, The Importance of Muscular Strength in Athletic Performance. Mm-hmm. I've referenced it often, but I pulled a quote from there. From the muscle physiology literature, we know that after eccentric exercise, the athlete's cytoskeletal proteins, such as Desmin and Titan, are disrupted and degradation occurs, possibly as high as 30% after one bout, a single bout of eccentric exercise. This process then results in a protective adaptation that strengthens the cytoskeletal proteins and prevents them from being damaged in the future. That's huge. They have not only, like, from a anecdotal side, coaches have known that eccentric strength is really important for basketball. I referenced it in my change of direction speed video often, because eccentric strength is critical to increase your change of direction speed. But we know also that eccentric strength is critical to prevent injury prevention. So from a practical side of things, rather than just dropping in your squat and then standing up fast, or drop your deadlift and bounce off the ground and come up, maybe let's try a 3-4-5 second lowering. And again, if you watch my videos, you'll see I'm very intentional about establishing tempos, or the speed at which we move in the weight room. But I'm very, you know, determined to set those tempos before I go and do a lift. And you need to be strong in the eccentric. Sean, I'd love your feedback on that one.
I'm with you on the eccentrics. I mean, we talked about in the other video on change of direction how important eccentrics are. But if you reference the intensity lecture we talked about last week, when we're talking about muscle degradation and protein degradation, these are the things that we want to challenge. These are the things that we need our body to adjust to. We're trying to adapt. Training creates an adaptation. We need to stress a system for it to change. And the protein degradation is a result of either high weight or loads under a stress. And so, I mean, you got to have it. I mean, it's part of injury prevention. Like if you're talking about, hey, I need an injury prevention protocol, strength training, eccentrics, isometrics, which we can get into, and stiffness and things like that are part of injury prevention. I would almost argue that being a stronger athlete is more important than, don't want to go anywhere yet, but being a stronger athlete will be the most beneficial for injury prevention. That's eccentric strength, obviously, on the muscle. That's going to come down to isometric strength, which we know affects more of the connective tissue. So we're talking like ligaments and tendons being stronger as well, which will help produce and transfer more power. So not only is it better for injury recovery, but it's also better for athletic performance.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's a really good point. Do you want to speak to acute workload versus recovery?
Yeah, I do. I was just in here pulling up some stuff, but this is something for the overuse athletes. So yeah, we get injuries different ways, right? So when we're talking injury prevention, there's a few things that we can do between our training, between our nutrition, hydration, sleep. And then we can also have a better managed training load. Oftentimes an injury occurs because of overuse. If you're like runners, like in my career, the most I've seen is either runners or throwers, where they're constantly throwing, or they're constantly throwing at too high an intensity, or they're adding too many miles. And so here's an introduction. In 1975, a study with Bannister et al. Proposed that performance of an athlete in response to training can be estimated from the difference between a negative function, so the difference between your fatigue from your training, and positive function, which is your fitness. So in this model, it was later suggested that the ideal training stimulus is one that maximizes performance by utilizing an appropriate training load while simultaneously limiting the negative consequences of training. So this is basically saying we need to manage training and recovery to prevent injury. It's a lot of fancy. It's just a lot of basically saying there's acute workload, which is like day after day. This is within 1 week, within 7 days. Then you have your chronic workload, which is like about 4 weeks. But knowing how much your body can tolerate, and this goes back to where you're at in season, where you're at between practices and training. If you're an in-season athlete, your practices are your priority. So if you do too much volume in training with too much practice volume, now we're going to have too much workload for recovery. So this will spike, you'll get a spike in injury if the process is unmatched. And so a lot of people I find, when they're not intuitively thinking, or they're not getting enough of the recovery side of things, which we can talk about as injury prevention, this leads to high chronic loads, high acute loads, and then more injury.
What have you noticed signs of overtraining? Maybe we can go there to get a little more practical.
The signs of overtraining, I would say, usually if you're actually overtrained, which is a physiological deficit, you're going to be, temperament's going to change. You're going to be really irritable. Your central nervous system's not going to be firing. Things are going to be harder to think through. Their mental clarity is going to be down. You can actually have physiological changes as well. So the central nervous system stops firing. I know some coaches that use like jump devices or a jump mat to make sure that the CNS is firing at peak rates. So I knew one coach who would have all his athletes do a jump test to make sure that their numbers were about even through the week. Or if one day he came in and his jump test was, you know, 2 or 3 inches lower than normal out of random, he'd say, hey, what happened? Did you not eat? Did you not sleep? What are you feeling today? And so those are things that can help identify overtraining. But you'll get a burnout, a mental, psychological burnout. You get physical fatigue. Everything becomes harder. You're not sleeping well. And it's a lot of mental state, really, is what I'm looking at. I mean, physiological state, too, is a result of mental state. But you'll feel it. You can just, you're irritable and you're tired and nothing seems to work right. Yeah. And at that point is usually a pretty good time to back off.
Yeah, that's a really good point about being irritable and temperamental and moody. And, you know, if your spouse, your girlfriend, if your parents, your friends say, dude, you're being a jerk lately, you know, maybe be like, what's my training like? One thing I've noticed is you can't fall asleep. You either can't fall asleep, sure, or you can't stay asleep. That's just, again, being too amped up, being your nervous system is too out of whack, you're training way too hard, and your sleep will be affected. And then another thing that they show in the literature, your grip will go. So your forearms won't recover. Your forearms will be just too tired and overworked, and you won't be able to grip like you normally can. And so that's a telltale sign of overtraining.
I think that links directly to the jump mat test, where the output of strength is limited from the brain. Cause I mean, it's not really hard to squeeze something max effort. That's pretty low threshold versus jumping is a compound movement. But if I can't produce a signal to my grip on something that's very easy and low hanging fruit to produce force, then I think that's another really easy test to identify a lack of signaling from the brain.
So we talked a lot about lower body. One thing I wanted to hit on with upper body injuries, primarily the elbow and the shoulder, is you need to vary your grips on your lifts. So if you look at just anatomically neutral, if I'm just standing here normal, my hands will be pretty neutral. They won't be pronated. Okay. So palms down is pronated. Yet almost everybody that I see, when they do, let's use a chest press as an example, they do a pronated grip. Okay. When the neutral grip is more natural on the body. Again, if I'm just standing here, my hands are more neutral than they are pronated. At least they should be, unless you have really poor posture and upper kyphotic, blah, blah. So all of my dumbbell work is done with a neutral grip. Now I do vary it with, you know, bicep curls maybe and things like that. I'll change the hand positions, but if I'm doing a dumbbell press overhead or horizontal, I'm using a neutral grip. And I think that's very important. I've eliminated pain in people's elbows just by changing the grip. Because if you think about a barbell, you have to go pronated. You know what I mean? If you're doing a press, you're not going to press supinated. So you're pressing.
Have you tried that?
It's
really cool. It feels like a fly with the elbows tight. It's insane. Oh, wow.
Nice.
It's a cool variation.
Right. Yeah. So naturally, just to offset the amount of pronated work you do with the barbell, it makes sense to do neutral grip. Don't forget to add the supinated grip. So same thing with chin-ups. Don't always be here. I love the neutral grip chin-ups. I love supinated, semi-pronated. Change your grip, and that will alleviate they call it the golfer's elbow and the tennis elbow, the lateral and medial epicondylitis. But those pains that you get in the inside of the elbow or the outside of the elbow, as well as pain up in the shoulder and the AC joint, you can eliminate a lot of that stuff just by alternating your grips.
Yeah, having had a bench press injury and a cause of my shoulder orthopedic surgery, I can attest to that. And again, too, it goes back to the overuse injury, right? So if we're not varying our grips and varying how we press or the different movements, if I only ever did bench press, I am getting a drastic overload into that specific area. So variability is huge, planned variability, like every 3 weeks or so. But I did want to say for guys, like conceptually, just to help this make sense, for the neutral grip on the dumbbells, the shoulder presses, anytime we got dumbbells, we want to go neutral grip. Is because you think about it, the bone in your arm right here is called your humerus. The humerus is actually shaped with an angled head on it like this. So your bone's pretty straight. And then the part that goes into your shoulder socket is hooked. And there's the top of your shoulder blade comes up and over this hook and sits on top of it.
Yeah.
And so what happens is if you go neutral grip, you're actually rotating the orientation of the humerus bone in the glenohumeral joint. And you free up space in your shoulder for it to glide and contract smoothly. It's a little bit of, you know, biomechanics, but the shoulder blade in the back has to move. The front has to move. There's a lot of stuff that runs up and under the shoulder joint. Yeah. So bench pressing over and over will kind of jack up your shoulders. I can speak from experience and I can speak from, you know, training tons of athletes, but it's a really common cause of overuse injury, especially if you have an overhead athlete, baseball, football quarterback, tennis player, water polo. Those guys are really susceptible to overhead injuries. And I know plenty of baseball pitchers and football quarterbacks who opt not to do a barbell bench press anymore because they've known and they've felt the side effects of that overuse in their shoulder.
Right. And you mentioned the bench press and people overly bench pressing. And another point with the upper body, obviously you need to, again, we talked about structural balance. So balance out the front to back, top to bottom, side to side. Most obviously this group is mostly guys. There are some females in here, but guys love to press. They love to use their chest. They love to use the muscles that they can see in the mirror. Don't neglect your back. Make sure you're getting rows in, a lot of rows, a lot of chin-ups. Keep your back nice and strong. That not only will help to keep the balance, but if you think about a defensive position, your back is what's holding you up. If your back's weak, you're going to fall forward. You won't be in proper defensive position. So I'm big on strengthening the back. And then make sure you use all 180 degrees range of motion with your presses. So again, a lot of people press here. They do the bench press. They don't do as much incline or overhead or decline or dips. So from here all the way here, we need to be strong pressing overhead, all 100 degrees range of motion. So dips, decline press, press, incline press, and overhead. Make sure you're varying your angles so that you're not just overly using the muscles in one plane of motion, but we're using them throughout all planes of motion.
That's a solid point. I do want to add on to that. It's a really common trap to train the muscles you can see in a mirror. Yeah. One of my advisors and professors, a rule of thumb, if you're training an athlete, just said, train the backside of the body. If you're going to do anything with somebody and you don't know what to do, train the backside, back, hamstrings, glutes, everything you can't see. Because like Phil said, the backside of the body is the part of the body that holds you up and moves you forward. So if you're going to, you know, prioritize your time anywhere, I'd prioritize the backside of the body for better posture, for better horizontal movement, for better sprinting, and for better just, you know, life.
For better life.
For better life.
You know, yeah. One thing I use with my general population clients is I say, you know, I'm trying to make you harder to kill. And that's
kind of the
point. Same thing on basketball. Like, hey, we're trying to make you more difficult to guard. We're trying to make you more difficult, more harder to kill. Anyway, I'm going to share my screen again. I want to show a couple different things. So some common weaknesses. Some common weaknesses that can avoid injury. One is the VMO. Now, the VMO is the muscle, I'll just show you. The VMO is the muscle that's right on the inside of the thigh. So here's my thigh, it's just on the inside and it's closest to the knee. And it's this little teardrop shaped muscle and it's called the vastus medialis oblique. It's called the VMO muscle. VMO is very critical. It's one of your main knee stabilizers and you can really target the VMO with certain exercises. So one I wanted to show you was here, it's called the Poliquin step up. There's your setup, and all we're doing is going down and up. Now, what you notice at the bottom is the knee is extremely far forward of the toe. Anytime that knee goes out forward of the toe, it puts a greater emphasis on the VMO. So that's why this exercise is really, really good to help strengthen the VMO. And if you've ever done it, you know for a fact, you will feel those VMOs really light up like a Christmas tree. If you're doing it properly, which is this good position and this bottom foot can't push off at all. So that's the Poliquin step up. It's a very good exercise for the VMO. Another one.
It overemphasizes.
Is the front foot elevated split squat. Again, at the bottom, look how far forward the knee is. We've talked about the importance of ankle dorsiflexion or the ability to close this angle from the shin to the toes. That is very important at creating a stronger knee and preventing knee pain. And so this is the front foot elevated split squat. And if you watch in super slow-mo, this is Scott, who's actually in the group. He's a pro player in Croatia. But anytime that knee goes forward of the toe, you'll really hit the VMOs. Another one. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're talking about injury prevention, which I know this is the topic of the day, but we're talking to a bunch of elite athletic basketball players.
Yeah.
Maybe we can highlight the fact that the knee over the toe is a crucial part of acceleration and that positive shin angle, that forward knee over the toe. You cannot achieve fast horizontal forward movement without first getting into that position.
Yeah, let's just do a quick
like sprint start, like just sprint acceleration. You'll see the knee and like the beautiful like takeoff, like full like sprint. Like look where these toes and these knees are during ground contact. Like look how similar that angle is, especially when you hit the ground strike. Like this is a paramount position for acceleration. So anyone that tells you, you know, knees over toes is a bad thing is someone who wants to be slow and weak.
Yeah, and you know, if I could find these pictures of a basketball cut, this isn't gonna work. when you cut in basketball, you can see it. That's the same scenario where those knees are just forward of the toes. It's really a really good important point. This is another one of my favorites. It's called the hack squat. Again, the knees are going forward, and what he's really trying to do is push his knees as far forward as he can, keeping the torso vertical. Another great one for the VMOs. And then another weakness that I see often is the backside, whether it's glutes or hamstrings. And so this is an outfit out of Huntington Beach, California. Great to follow Kilo Strength Society. The good morning. The good morning is a great one to strengthen the backside. There's a seated variation. Same thing with the back extensions. Now there's different angles. There's the 45 degree back extension. There's the horizontal back extension. And these hit the backside or the posterior chain at different points in the strength curve. So it's important, and we won't go into the strength curve really on this show, but it's important to be strong through the entire strength curve. So all of these exercises need to be incorporated at different times in your training season to make sure you're optimized and strong through the entire strength curve. And so he's just going through a bunch of different exercises for the posterior chain. There's your horizontal back extension. Okay. I think that's
for, it. Oh, for simpler terms for you guys, the strength curve is more indicative of how strong a muscle can be at what length, right? So if we're going through different angles at different angles, the strength curve is saying, I need to be strong here, I need to be strong here, and I need to be strong here. So we're and your joints are going to be, you know, stronger, weaker in different positions, but the stronger you can make that whole 180 degree range of motion that Phil was talking about earlier, the better off we'll be as a structurally balanced individual.
Yeah. You want to talk about strength speed maybe? And
I absolutely do, Phil. I don't know if you can pull up a message I sent you from your text, but this is a cool little infographic.
Oh, cool. Which one? All of them?
The first one with the dude sitting on the ground holding his knee.
Cool. I got it. We're going.
Does that go in for you?
Yep.
Cool. So if you want to share that, I'll just kind of go through that real quick.
All right, there you go.
Perfect. So this, do stronger and faster athletes have reduced injury risk? Yes, factually, yes, they do. So we're seeing that people that had a higher 3RM or a 3 rep max on their trap bar deadlift had reduced risk of injury compared to weaker athletes. We found athletes with faster repeated sprint ability had a lower injury risk than those with a slower repeated risk ability. And then athletes that were faster in the 5, 10, and 15 meter sprints had lower injury risk than those who had slower times in those risks. Wow. So the findings demonstrate that well-developed lower body strength athletes with repeated speed ability and speed are associated with better, higher tolerance to workloads and have a reduced injury risk in team sport athletes. I mean, that can go to any athlete really, but this just goes to show to highlight the fact this was done Malone et al. In 2018, published in the Journal of Science and Medicine and Sport. So relatively recent study, this goes back, I mean, kind of a ways, but just shows that if you're stronger and faster athlete, you are going to have reduced injury risk for the reasons we mentioned earlier. If you're stronger and faster, you're probably more mechanically aligned. You have better structural balance to be faster. You have a stronger posterior chain because you're producing horizontal force, which is speed. And you probably have a really good knee strength because you have that knee angle to produce those forward horizontal speeds. And so, again, anyone who told you knee over toes is bad for you is slow and weak.
I love that. What about these things? What do you got going on here?
So this one's another one. Go ahead and share that one, Phil. This is a youth athlete injury prevention training protocol. Okay. But if you see on here, injury prevention has also come down to plyometrics, lower limb strength, and lower limb power. So on this chart, it shows the improvement given the color. So a yellow is a small improvement. The green arrow is a moderate improvement. And a large improvement comes from sprint abilities and sport-specific testing. But basically what they did was static balance testing. They did dynamic balance testing. They did plyometrics. And they did lower limb strength and lower limb power. And we can see that the balance and stability helped a little bit, but it didn't quite help as much as the lower leg power, the lower leg strength, or the lower leg sprint abilities.
Yeah.
And so this is the what they called a multimodal injury prevention program. So just a IPP led to a number of neuromuscular adaptations. And those adaptations particularly explain the risk of reduced injury and associated with this injury prevention protocol. So they did 15 to 20 minutes. And they basically use this as a dynamic warm-up. So your balance, you're stretching, you're doing plyometrics, and you're doing a little bit of speed and power stuff like hops, skips, jumps at the end of your warm-up. And these have significant benefits to young athletes, to any athlete really, in developing central nervous system, rhythm, timing, coordination, and then also starting to get a basis for accelerated speed and power movements.
Who's down with IPP? All right.
Love it. And then the last one I sent you, I don't remember what the last one was.
Stress and fatigue.
Oh, that's just something. Are we there? Are we done talking about the other stuff?
Yeah, we can talk about stress and fatigue. Yeah.
So really, injury prevention also comes down to not just training, right? Injury prevention is also going to come down to what you're doing in your off time, what you're doing in your mind, what you're doing at home, what you're doing out with your friends, or what you're putting into your body. So we know athletes are susceptible to injury when they have higher stress and higher fatigue levels. We go back to that acute work to rest ratio where the fatigue was higher than the rest. So, I mean, when I talk about injury prevention, strength is a given. I'm going to get you strong. That's what I'm going to do. That's my job to you. But your job as an athlete for injury prevention is to stay hydrated. I think we talked about it, but I'm looking for at least half your body weight in ounces. You have to do the conversion for me, guys. If you're actually ounces, you guys probably lose liters and milliliters, do the conversion, but half your body weight in ounces. We're talking about good nutrition habits. We need protein to build the muscle, but we also need carbohydrates to replenish the blood sugar and muscle glycogen. And also provides that energy to build the muscle. The carbs are the fuel, which build the muscle. And then
guys with water, I typically go 3 liters. That's typically where I start. And then for the bigger guys, obviously they might need more. And I'd say, don't count the water you're drinking during the competition or during your games.
You're going to lose that anyway,
because you're losing. Yeah. With the sweat, you're losing hydration. You need to, what you're replenishing is just kind of a net neutral, net zero. So
I think with athletes, when I was looking into hydration, I think, basketball had one of the highest, losses of water. That you're working so hard, making so many cuts and changing direction. I think basketball players on average lose about 1 to 1.5 liters per hour during gameplay.
Gosh, yeah, that's
crazy. Of water. That's a lot of liquid. That's some people's daily intake.
So if you're playing for 2 hours, there's 2 liters, and then you have 3 liters for the rest of the day. So 5 liters minimum on those game days is probably a good bet for what you need water-wise.
And then, I mean, we're talking sleep. Like, you got to sleep for injury prevention. You repair, you grow, a lot of stuff happens at night. You have a lot of hormones active at night. If you're limiting your sleep, you're limiting the amount of time. It's like cutting off your workout. Sure, you want to do a long workout. You want to get an hour in, but you only did a 20-minute workout. Like, how much benefit are you going to get from that workout? Right. So if you're not getting enough sleep, you're really limiting the actual time where your body is growing, adjusting, and letting all the stress from the workout seep in. You're not stronger after a workout. You're stronger after you've recovered from the workout. So if you don't give yourself the chance to recover from a workout, you're not getting the benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really important. And I knew we would hit it eventually. That, you know, we talked about the training aspects of recovery of injury prevention, but gosh, if you don't sleep, you're just asking for injuries. If you're not totally on top of your recovery and getting the amount of sleep that you need, chances are something's going to break down eventually.
I got a really fun fact on that. There's a TED Talk, if you guys listen to TED Talks. It's called Sleep is Your Superpower. And they published a study that shows the day after daylight savings time, which is where everyone loses an hour of sleep, hospital heart attacks are up 30% the day following daylight savings time. So because 30% higher heart attack rates from not sleeping. And then to drive this home, conversely, when it's daylight saving times again and everyone adds an hour of sleep, heart attack rates the next day are down 30%.
Yeah.
That's mind blowing. That's literally mind blowing. And that's straight out of the TED Talk. There's research on that if you guys want to find it. Sorry, I don't have it on me right now. But it just goes to show like how important sleep is. And then also, guys, males, if you're listening to this, testosterone, testes, you know, down below, is also negatively inhibited. It's kind of the same thing. That's a double negative. Is also negatively affected or inhibited by lack of sleep. So that's huge. We need testosterone for muscle growth, for performance, to drive a lot of other factors physiologically. So if you're not sleeping, you're not filling up your gas tank all the way.
Right. Yeah, sleep is number one. Go back a few episodes, the six pillars. Master those basics to master your health. That number one for me is sleep. Bar none. It's everyone. It's available to everybody. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And it affects every single thing, including this, injury prevention and recovery. Yeah, that's awesome, Sean. Cool. Well, any last words? Any parting gifts, parting pearls?
Stronger and faster athletes are also harder to kill and less injury and less prone to injury.
Yeah, that'd be a good headline. Yeah, we should change the headline of the episode title.
And which breaks my heart, because if you go to the gym and you see all the average gym bros, none of them are working on some might. You could say that because I'm a bigger person, I'm a stronger person, but I mean, that's just relative strength and absolute strength. That's a common thing, mass means mass. But I'm talking true neurological strength, like six reps or less, heavy ass weight, long ass rest. Like, you don't see a lot of people in the gym just, you know, busting box jumps and sprints and, you know, power cleans and things. Unless obviously you come to, you know, an awesome coach like, you know, Phil Gephardt. But it breaks my heart because you see all these people in the gym doing just basic endurance hypertrophy stuff, and they're really limiting the potential for not only performance and strength and muscle size, but bone density and then injury prevention. So like we talked about lenses way back when, but it's a huge thing for me when people to make it aware that strength and power and speed exercises affect more than person on the court. It's a life-changing type of adaptation that affects the brain. Like, there's legitimately studies on there showing heavy loads reduce the effects of Parkinson's disease, reduce the effects of Alzheimer's disease, reduce the effects of other neurological diseases, brain diseases, people with MS, multiple sclerosis, where the central nervous system, the myelin sheaths that help the conduction velocity of nerves, we have weak nerves, and they've shown delayed symptoms from strength training. So strength doesn't have to be insane weight. Everyone has a different level for strength. My grandma getting off the chair can be strength. That could be heavy for her. That could be hard. So having her do some sit to stand ups could be strength training for her. For Phil, who's deadlifting 500 pounds, strength could be, 400 plus pounds. Strength is relative. Strength is relative to the individual, and it hits this spectrum of what's heavy, what's hard for you. So it's achievable. There's ways to do it safely. Machines are a great way to overload safely if you guys don't have a coach or don't have a program, don't have someone spotting you. But there's really good ways to get strong. There's really good ways to get powerful. So I'd really hate to see a lot of really big benefits be lost for just not doing as much as we could, I guess, in the weight room. I don't know, that's a long parting thought. But strength, power, move heavy, move fast. You'll live longer, be harder to kill, be a better athlete.
Yeah. So get strong, drink your water 3 to 5 liters a day, get enough sleep, improve your weaknesses, strengthen your weaknesses, And then what was a fifth point we hit on?
So many, I don't know.
Yeah, we had a lot of points. That fifth point is a bunch of points. That's all I got. Sean, thank you so much. That might have been our longest episode. We're at about 50 minutes right now, so that's really cool. But I hope that helps y'all. Take it to heart. Please apply these approaches that we're bringing up. Please let us know if you have questions, if you have comments about specific exercises or specific methods, or how much water do I need to drink because I don't speak English that well and I don't know what an ounce is. You know, let us know. Feel free to ask below in the comments, or just DM me and we'll go from there. Cool. Sean, you good?
Thank right. you.
Drink that water, man. We'll see you, coach.
Got it. Later, guys.
Bye.